drive to far side. Johnny scores! Mark Savard! The Boston Bruins are back in it!
WSHS Sterling High School Radio with your host Rob Strauss and John Flacco.
Enough is enough. Start playing with some jam in here. Let's go.
And welcome to yet another edition of the Blue Line right here on WSHS Sterling High School Radio. Rob Strauss, John Flacco, bringing you the second installment of the NHL playoff edition. And what a week it's been since we last spoke, about 7-8 days ago, John. A lot of stuff going on in the NHL and just a crazy start to these playoffs.
I mean, some things went kind of like the way we thought they would, and some things went completely opposite the way they thought they would. I think last year at this time, we were throwing our hands up because everything was going the opposite of how we expected.
Well, it's kind of the way the whole season's gone. I mean, if you think about it, the whole season's been kind of crazy. The teams that we thought were going to be playoff contenders aren't. And now you have and we're going to get to all the playoff matchups here, but the teams that you thought were not good are good. And we'll get to the Islanders, and that's pretty much who I'm talking about, if you can read between the lines here. The big story right now, and this is hot off the presses, is Vancouver, the Canucks, getting swept out by the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, Vancouver being the 3 seed. Now, granted, that 3 seed versus 6 seed there, those two teams are only separated by a couple of wins. So
yeah, it's
pretty
even
matchup.
I think that's irrelevant.
Right.
But the Vancouver Canucks, a lot of controversy going on throughout the season about the Canucks, especially with their goaltending situation, the tandem of Roberto Luongo, Corey Schneider, and going back and forth. Is Luongo going to get traded? Is he not going to get traded? Winds up not getting traded at the deadline. A lot of teams rumored to be in the mix on that one, Toronto being one of them. And so he does remain as a Canuck for now. But with all the offense on that team and all the talent on that team between the Sedin twins, you also have Ryan Kessler on that team, among others. How does this team get swept out of the playoffs?
You know, it was the same thing last year. Whatever it is about this team, they're just not built for the playoffs. Now, granted, the whole goalie controversy was a mistake from the beginning of the season. They needed to make a decision about who was their goalie and ship out who wasn't their goalie. In this case, they needed to ship Luongo out and get him out from under there to get the Vancouver press off of them so, you know, they can concentrate. Now, I think Schneider had a pretty good year in spite of that, but I think it was just bad timing in the sense that he wasn't fully at full strength come playoff time. I think that hurt them a little bit, but that was not the reason that they got swept in that series.
And the reason being, and I think this is what you're alluding to here, John, is Antti Niemi won the Stanley Cup with the Chicago Blackhawks back in 2010, mm-hmm. or was it 11? Was it 11? 10.
Two playoffs ago. So
yeah,
11.
11. He has, Niemi in this series anyway, a 1.86 goals against average and a .937 save percentage. So Niemi, really the reason, one of the reasons anyway, that the Sharks were able to sweep out the Vancouver Canucks. And let's be honest here. In any sport, in any 7-game playoff series, it's tough to sweep a team out.
Yeah. Oh, especially when you have, you know, that first home game in the playoffs and you know, you got riding the momentum of the fans and everything. It usually carries you to a lead. I'm just going back to the other point, looking at the stats. If you look at the stats in the playoffs, Luongo, even though he's not wasn't stellar, 915 save percentage. His save percentage and goals against was tremendously better than Schneider's was in the playoffs. So you can't go there.
So they go with Luongo for the first two games, and then they go back to Corey Schneider, who was injured towards the end of the regular season, and that doesn't really pay off at all either. So you'd have to give some props also to Logan Couture of the Sharks, 3 goals, 5 assists for 8 points in that series. Patrick Marleau, 4 goals. And just an unbelievable series for the guys that you would expect to have good series for San Jose.
Yeah, I mean, Marleau was a standout player a few years back. He kind of disappeared a little bit in San Jose, and he's shown himself to be a premier player in this league and showed up in the playoffs, especially this year. Let's see if he can continue that into the next round.
I think the bigger question is what's next for Vancouver? Like, where do they go next? You have that the Roberto Luongo cloud, that's a big purple elephant standing in the corner that nobody wants to talk about. What do you do with this situation? You have technically 2 number 1 goaltenders on your roster. What do you do, and where do you pick up the piece? Who's gonna be the fall guy for this one? Yeah.
And then you look at their top line. You take any one of those guys, they can be a top player on a bunch of different teams. You know, so it's not a question of talent. So, you know, is it chemistry? Is it coaching? Is it, you know, I can't believe that it's coaching over the years, because they've been a regular season team that's played well in the regular season. Maybe you just need that an injection of playoff experience in there to get somebody to show them how to win in the playoffs.
Just some quick numbers. The Sedin twins combined for 90 points in the regular season. They just mustered 6 assists
total
in the 4 games. Now, you look at that and you say, okay, well, that's not too bad. But if they're both on the same line and they both assist on the same play,
who's getting the goals, right?
Exactly. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this team in the next couple days, next couple weeks, next couple months, see who's going to take the hit for this, because let's be honest, this is a very, very good Vancouver team. It has a lot of talent on this team and a lot of payroll. And usually when something like this happens, especially in a sweep fashion, somebody is going to take the hit. And who's it going to be?
I think, given you said with that the salary cap is going down next year and the amount of money that's being spent, you may see them blow it up. You may see keep players who they think are their core, and I would think they have to get rid of Luongo at this point. They can't go another season with him as the two tandem.
And he's not getting any younger either, is Luongo. I think he started his career as an Islander, went over to Florida. I think we mentioned this in our last broadcast. But he is 34 years old, and he'll be 35 next April.
When does that humongous monster contract end, though? That's the key.
I don't know. I mean, that's the big thing.
Because he signed like a 10-year or 13-year something with New York, right? And when he was when he came up?
Right. Yeah, I believe so, yeah. But that was a long time ago. He was drafted by the Islanders back in the 1997 entry draft. His first round, 4th overall.
There can't be too many years left on that
contract.
You
got to look at him. He's going to be 35 next year. How many good years does he have left? And there's a lot of teams that are out there that would love to have a Luongo.
Right, but he's not a guy who you stick in and say, all right, we'll ride the season and then stick playoff time. We're going to ride him in the playoffs. He's not that kind of goalie.
And obviously this series, the big surprise, I think, on everybody's radar. You actually picked San Jose in 7 games. And they did it in 3 fewer games than you had anticipated.
Yeah. So I thought there'd be a lot of goals scored in this series.
I thought so, too. Well, there were a lot of goals scored, just not by Vancouver.
Only by San Jose, right?
Yeah, unfortunately not for Vancouver and their fans. I wonder if they're flipping cars over, like I had mentioned in the last broadcast. I'm sure that they are not happy if you pick up any Canadian West Coast, any piece of press or online article. I wonder what their take is on this. I'd love to hear a little bit of sports talk radio out in on the left coast, if you will.
Yeah, it's got to be frustrating. Well, think of what it would lose that way 2 years in a row.
Yeah, and think of what it would be like here if you have a team that has all this talent and gets to the playoffs, and there's this, you know, we know goaltending controversies very well in this area, and you get to the first round of the playoffs, and not only do you lose, I mean, one thing, if you lost in seven games, you lost a couple overtime games, it could have gone either way. They got completely dominated out of this first round series.
Yeah, I mean, I think here fans would be calling for somebody's head. At least in Vancouver, they didn't give the coach and the anyone else a vote of confidence after being swept like we did here.
Right.
You know, we didn't make the playoffs, but the GM and the coach got a vote of confidence from the owner. So I think two different things going on there. But, yeah, I think the frustration level has to be the same with the fans. I mean, you know, we know Vancouver, they're rabid hockey fans, and we see it all the time. And, you know, that's, you know, how else – what else happens in Vancouver anyway, right?
The Olympics a long time ago? I mean,
that was a long time ago,
but other than that –
they shoot a few movies up here.
Sure. And that'll be interesting to see how that pans out. I'm sure we'll get a little bottom line blip or an update on our NHL phone or the phones through the Game Center or whatever that on what's happening with Vancouver. But the only time will tell what happens out there. Someone's going to have to take a hit there. It's just a matter of who and when. Switching gears right now to the other Western Conference series, the top-seeded Chicago Blackhawks taking on the Minnesota Wild, who picked up two huge offseason acquisitions in Ryan Suter and Zach Parise. The Minnesota Wild find themselves down 3-1. And even though they did take the first game, Minnesota did, on their home ice in a 3-2 fashion, Chicago bounces back last night and beats them handily 3-0. So Chicago on their way over to advancing onto the next round.
Yeah, I think the Wild kind of rode that wave of their fans. It was an exciting game to watch. They had some good bounces. Their top stars played well, and they scrapped out a win. But I think you saw who the better team was in this series. I mean,
absolutely.
Just the evidence, just to give you a little hint, one of an ex-Flyer is actually making a difference on a third line on that team. And
that would be Michael Hanzus.
And not in an offensive way either. He is playing a role there, and it's been an effective role for them.
And the ex-Flyer report coming up in the third period of this broadcast, so we'll get an update on which Flyers are doing well, and or ex-Flyers, because there are no Flyers in the playoffs, much to your dismay there. The Hawks have absolutely dominated this series. They're only holding the Wild to six goals in four games. That's good enough for a 1.39 goals against average for Corey Crawford and a .949 save percentage. So it has been the story pretty much all season for the Hawks. They're firing on all cylinders, and Corey Crawford is the reason for that.
Is this a disappointing season for the Wild?
That's a good question. Based on the fact that I don't think they've ever made the playoffs before, in recent memory anyway. I don't think they've, as a franchise.
But they went out and signed the two biggest free agents out there, only to back into the playoffs and lose and win one playoff game.
Your boy Zach Parise, who was their big offseason acquisition.
He's a devil. He's not my boy.
One goal in this series alone, and he has a -6 rating.
Yeah, that's
not telling.
Good. Yeah,
that tells you something.
Is. That absolutely is.
And to answer your question, John, I don't know. I wouldn't say it's a complete loss. If it was an 82 game season,
yeah, it was a short season.
If it was an 82 game season and they snuck in as an 8 seed on like the last day of the regular season, then I would say, yeah, that's a disappointment. But you're facing a team that not a lot of teams in the Western Conference have beat all this season. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, that's just something that is, I think, it's just destiny, I think, at this point for Chicago at least get past this round.
I think you'll have to see how they do at the beginning of next year to really decide whether that was worth the investment.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Although I don't know who else they're going to add to that team with all the money they spent. I think what they are at this point, so hopefully they're going to get better.
Well, the free agent market's going to be very interesting once the regular the playoffs are over, to see, and we always get this towards the end of our run here on the blue line, to see who the big free agents are. It's usually like our last show, and just to talk about who are the big free agents, where could they go, who needs it the most, where do you fill the void in Minnesota? You have to look at they missed their top goaltender, got hurt in warmups, mm-hmm. right before game one. One of the weirdest things ever. He made a routine save in practice and then went to his right and pulled a hammy and had to be helped off the ice. So now you lose him. And that's got to be deflating.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't think goaltending has been a huge.
I think the fact that the guy you signed for a ridiculous amount of money in the offseason is a minus six.
Yeah.
That's who you got to look at.
That's a bigger.
Suter's holding his own. But again, Chicago only lost seven games all season. So.
Yeah.
And Minnesota lost 19. So I don't know. I just think the better team is holding serve here, in my opinion. The other very, very compelling series before we get off to our first break here is the Ottawa Senators and the Montreal Canadiens series, which as we mentioned this last week, was going to be the Battle of Canada. Mm-hmm. And as big as a deal as hockey is down here in Philadelphia, it's magnified 10 times over up in Canada. I think this is the marquee matchup for the Canadian markets. You have two teams that are separated by like 10 miles battling it out. And when I say battling it out, if you guys caught a glimpse of the game, I believe it was game 3, the first game in Ottawa, it got completely out of control.
Game 3.
And there was a hockey game broke out at the fight. it was unbelievable. This is the series to watch right now, and Ottawa holds a 3-1 lead right now, and I really don't see, unless something completely crazy happens, I don't see Montreal moving on, and that's going to really, really shake some things up in Montreal.
Well, I don't know because, I mean, you didn't watch it live. I did watch it live the other night. Montreal had a 2-1 lead with a minute left.
I did catch parts of that, yes.
And Ottawa pulled their goaltender. Now, if Montreal pulls that game out and we're 2-2, it might be a different series right now. But Ottawa came back and dominated in overtime, and now they're up 3-1, and it's a completely different series.
The ex-Phoenix Coyote Kyle Turris getting the overtime game-winning goal for the Senators last night. And the Sens, very, very quietly, a very good team. They were in the mix of winning the Northeast up until the last week or so of the season. And so they're right in the mix.
Yeah, I think I said to you earlier in the week that Ottawa is becoming the team that everyone thought they would be at the beginning of the season. For whatever reason, injury to Carlson one year played a part in that, but for whatever reason, they just did not come together and play up to expectations. But I think you're seeing that team right now. Now, I don't know. I think Montreal is a little bit of an overrated team going into the playoffs. I don't think they were as good as their numbers have said, but I think we're seeing a true showing of what these two teams are right now in the playoffs.
Which is weird because their special teams are like right in the middle of the road in terms of playoff teams. They're both eighth in penalty power play points percentage and penalty killing percentage. So you have to wonder where it's really coming from. And you're looking at this team. I think the emergence of Carlson coming back on defense the last week of the regular season really gave them that boost that they needed. And he is, I don't want to say an elite defenseman because I think it's a little too early to say that he's an elite defenseman yet, but if you're going to give he's on the radar to become an elite defenseman, guy.
Yeah, you can see the skills are evident with him. It's just a matter of him doing it over a long period of time.
And not to mention, Carlson has one goal, 4 assists, as well as Daniel Alfredsson. So Alfredsson, a veteran, he's been to the playoffs a number of times before. He knows, he's been to a Stanley Cup final, and he knows what to do in the playoffs. And you bundle that with great goaltending out of Craig Anderson, and that's good stuff
Well, here's the thing that worries me about Ottawa. You look at Anderson, right? You got Carlson lagging 28 minutes a game. You got Sergei Gonchar lugging 23 minutes a game.
At what point do they...
And after that, it's a big drop-off.
But if they're going to beat Montreal in 5 games, they're going to have that couple days of rest.
True.
Until their next opponent, which we will get to in our next segment, coming up in a couple minutes. We mentioned Craig Anderson, 3-1 right now with an even 2.00 goals against average, a .945 save percentage. On the flip side of the coin, you look at Montreal, Carey Price, who has a ton of pressure on him because of everything that's going on. You're playing in the hotbed of hockey in Montreal.
He might as well be a New York basketball player right now.
1-2 is Carey Price with a .326 goals against average and an .894 save percentage. Peter Budaj came in and relief on that mess of a game, game three. And we're not going to mention his numbers, but whatever, because he came in relief effort. So right. It's really not fair to put him in that. But Peter Budaj actually took the loss in that game. But either way, Carey Price, .894 save percentage.
Yeah, that's
for a number two seed.
That's not good.
That's not gonna cut it.
No.
PK Subban, one goal, two assists, and everybody. Whenever you mention Montreal nowadays, you want to mention PK Subban, one goal, two assists. And more importantly, 29 penalty minutes out of PK Subban. And Montreal as a team, just two, count them, two power play goals.
Two, huh? Yeah, that's not going to get it done.
No, that will not get it done. That will not get it
especially
done.
Especially when your top scoring players, Subban, is on the power play. And he's not getting power play goals.
Yeah, that's not a good sign. So it looks like, obviously, the Sharks have moved on. They're just going to hit a couple rounds of golf before and await their next opponent. And Chicago looking like they're going to move on as well as Ottawa. But you never know, especially with that rivalry, Northeast Division rivalry matchup between Ottawa and Montreal. I think we both had, I believe we did both have Ottawa.
Yes, we did. We have Ottawa in the upset.
In the upset special, which I don't think is an upset at all. By seeding-wise, yes, upset, but
right.
Everything else
yeah,
not so
much. Yeah,
if
you look at record, but if you look at who came back and where they played at the end of the year, I think most people would take – I think the money line would say Ottawa as a favorite.
And that's going to take us off to our very first break. We close up the first period. Second period, we're going to have a special guest, Jeff O'Connor, going to be joining us, one of my co-hosts from the sports team over at WGLS at Rowan University. He's going to join us via phone. He couldn't join us last week. He's going to talk some Eastern Conference matchups with us. And we'll get off to a quick break. When we get back, again, more Eastern Conference matchups right here on the Blue Line on WSHS, Sterling High School Radio.
Man, there's nothing good on the radio anymore. It's the same thing on every station.
Hey, not every station's like that. I just started following At Nights Radio on Twitter. They tweet news about the Sterling community and they have their own radio station.
But what makes them different?
Well, the whole station is run by students.
That's awesome, and I love Twitter. I'm going to go follow At Nights Radio right now.
Follow At Nights Radio on Twitter to receive news about sports, music, and everything Sterling.
Sterling High School is currently seeking high school and college students with Red Cross lifeguard certifications who would be interested in working as a lifeguard this spring at Sterling North, also known as the former Voorhees YMCA. Students will be compensated at a rate of $10 an hour. Interested students should submit an application, which is available in the general office at Sterling High School during the hours of 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. or call 856-784-1287. That's 856-784-1287.
Hi, this is Tim Saunders, radio voice of the Philadelphia Flyers. You're listening to The Blue Line right here on WSHS, Sterling High School Radio.
And welcome back to The Blue Line right here on WSHS, Sterling High School Radio. Rob Strauss, John Flacco, and now join special guest of WGLS Sports Department fame, Jeff O'Connor, on the phone with us. Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
Guys, thanks for having me. I'm doing great. How are you?
Fantastic. Wonderful. Thanks for joining us here on the Blue Line. So you're our first ever phone guest, so I guess you've made history here on the Blue Line. Nice
Absolutely.
Work.
Absolutely. I guess I got to go into the Hall of Fame then, too, right?
Well, yeah, of course, and you'll just follow our lead.
All right. Excellent. Thanks.
First things first, Jeff comes to us from WGLS fame over at Rowan University, so he and I did many, many sports events together, and Jeff is a Devils fan. Don't hold that against him, John. You can't punch him through the phone.
Okay.
So don't hold
reserve.
That against him.
Since we both missed
I'm already down anyway. I'm already down and out anyway. I'm already KO'd. There's no need to punch me.
Yeah. Well, we're both in that spot since we both got knocked out of playoffs.
Yeah, it's all good. Some NHL awards, just some updates here. The Vezina Finals just announced earlier today for the top goaltender in the regular season, Sergei Bobrovsky of the Columbus Blue Jackets. How do you feel about that one, Flacco? Henrik Lundqvist of the Rangers and Antti Niemi of the San Jose Sharks. And guys, this is a very, very interesting. You know, there's no Brodeur on here. There's no Luongo on here. There's some interesting names that we're not used to seeing.
I'm going to tell you, I looked at those stats closely today, there, Mr. Strauss, and I think I can make a case for Sergei Bobrovsky.
You're going to go with the Bob.
I think I can make a case.
My man.
For Bob. I think Bob, even if you look at where Bob is and what he did with Columbus this year, and compared to his stats are comparable in, they're better in save percentage. Obviously, wins are not the same as Lundqvist and Niemi. But if you look at save percentage, it's better. Goals against is slightly more. But again, I think that's a product of the team he plays for. And you look at the minutes logged, the minutes he played this year on that team and the shots faced, I think Bob's the best candidate for the Vezina.
Jeff?
You know what? I've always had a soft spot for the Sharks. I'm going to go with Niemi. And I know it is a regular season award, but if the Sharks get on a run here, and they've looked impressive over the last four games, whether it's getting out in front early like they did in the first few games and taking care of business, or making some comebacks in the last few games against the Canucks and taking the games, if they end up getting maybe to the conference finals, that might do enough for him to make a run. Because obviously Bobrovsky played a nice role for Columbus, and they certainly missed the playoffs. So the Rangers go one and out, and it's tough to see Lundqvist winning back-to-back ones. I know playoffs has nothing to do with it, but I feel like it always gives you maybe a slight edge here and there. I feel these guys, for the most part, are pretty evenly matched. So I think even if Lundqvist, he would have to get back to the conference finals too. But I think Niemi, what he's done this year, you know, with the Sharks team, you know, they are constantly in and out. Now this is, you know, he's been here a few years, and he's looked very sharp against the Canucks. And he had a pretty strong year. They got out to that blazing start, if you remember. They were right up there in the talk with the Blackhawks right out of the gate. I think they won their first nine or whatever it was, or they were unbeaten in their first nine in regulation. They got off to that hot start, so he helped them get into the playoffs, even though they struggled a little bit down the end. I think he should be given a shot. I mean, he's already won a Stanley Cup, so I think this is the next credential on the list for him to get.
Yeah, I mean, I like what you said there, Jeff, about Lundqvist. It's really, really tough to win back-to-back anything in any sport, let alone what's the last back-to-back Vezina Trophy winners? I mean, we would have to go into the history books on that one. Maybe we can do a little research and find out. But
it's got
to
be a Canadian or
Patrick Waugh, maybe. Was it Marty?
Maybe. Could be.
Who knows?
I think Brodeur won two straight after the lockdown, I think. Yeah. I can't recall, though.
Yeah, but I think that you have a shift in the goaltending. Niemi, obviously, we didn't see a lot of here on the East Coast because of the lockout and the East not playing the West. But the guy's won a Stanley Cup, and he backstopped the Hawks to a Stanley Cup championship. And it's tough to say, but I think Niemi takes it. And like Jeff said, it's tough to win back-to-back. Bob is a nice addition, and I'm sure that's kind of salt in the wounds of Flyers fans right now, trading away Bobrovsky for nothing, basically. Mm. And now you have who was in that trade for Bob?
They got I think they just got draft picks from Columbus.
Wow.
To be honest with you, I don't think they got a player from Columbus.
It wasn't Voracek, was it? Well, that might have been the Voracek. That might have been the Voracek deal. I'm not sure. We'd have to look that one up. But either way, those are your Vezina finalists. And one other was announced, I think, earlier in the week, was the Norris finalist, P.K. Subban from Montreal, Chris Letang out of Pittsburgh, who I think is going to be the winner of this trophy this year, and then obviously Ryan Suter from Minnesota. And Jeff, I'll start with you first. P.K. Subban is one of the most talked about defensemen in the NHL for probably the last couple of years.
You know what? You could pick any one of these guys. You know, any of these guys get announced on whatever day the awards are, sometime in, I guess, in July. If any of these guys get announced, honestly, none of them would really surprise me that much. For me, and it's not the awards, what it actually is, it's for best defensemen, but I'd almost kind of see some of the awards as almost most valuable defensemen. I mean, that's what the awards sometimes feel like to me. And for me, what P.K. Subban did, considering he missed the first bunch of games of the season, considering the contract dispute and whatnot, he came in, and this Montreal team was, you know, already a solid team, but they really took off once he got there. I mean, there's a reason they, you know, in years past, they've really been a bottom-of-the-pack team. They've been a 6th seed, a 7th seed, an 8th seed. And he has grown each year. And I think this year, what he did in a limited number of games was mighty impressive. Well, Tang is, you know, he's consistent as they come. Suter, considering he went to a new team and, you know, kept up his, you know, excellent rate of play, is good too. But I think what Subban did, considering he missed how much time he did and then how much of an impact he made to the Canadians, making them a 2 seed, a really, really strong team compared to just a quality team like they've been in years past. I think he brought them another element and he took them to a new level this year. So I would go with Subban.
Yeah, I have to agree with the pick. I think if you look at I always look at, and with defensemen, look at the plus minus, not in the sense that whoever has the highest is the best, but in the, for the, when you look at these offensive type defensemen like the ones nominated, you want to see that they have a decent plus minus rating, that they're not, you know, giving up things on defense to kind of cheat offensively. And one thing you notice with Suter, he's a +2, I think, for the regular season, something like that, whereas these other two guys are have much higher plus minus. So you don't really give up a whole lot when these guys are on the ice. They're tough guys. They stick their nose in. They're more overall type players, and I think it's a real close race. I think Letang suffers from being in the shadow of a bunch of other players on Pittsburgh, and I think that honestly hurts them. But I think, like Jess said, with Subban coming back so late and just jumping in and making a difference, I think he's been part of the reason why they've achieved as much as they did this year. So I think you'll see him get it this year.
Yeah, and that's a nice little segue. You mentioned Chris Letang to start talking about our Eastern Conference quarterfinals matchups. And the first one we're actually going to talk about, ironically enough, is going to be the Pittsburgh Islanders series, which after the first two games, I'm like, okay, well, this is going to be done in four. I thought, and I think everybody was kind of like that. And now the Islanders, the young upstart Islanders who come in as an 8th seed, do they have enough to slay the Giant here? And the series is tied 2-2. And this is a shout out to one of our Twitter listeners, or our one of the listeners of Sterling Radio, who shot us a question via Twitter, Dylan Pierce. And he said, can the Islanders take down the Pens? Guys, is it possible?
You know, if you asked me 2 days ago, I'd say no. But if you look at the goals that the Islanders have scored in the past three games, I can't count them out. I mean, if you had to ask me yes or no right now, I'd say no, that Pittsburgh will wind up on top. But, you know, the Islanders, after getting shut out in that first game, have just put on an offensive show. And it's not just come from Tavares. It's come from all over. So, you know, I got to give them a shot. But like I said, if it has to ask me yes or no, I'm going to say Pittsburgh comes out on top.
Jeff, two Atlantic Division rivals with your New Jersey Devils. What do you think?
You know what? I think you wouldn't be surprised if the Islanders close this out in Game 6 on the island right now, because now they've got the Penguins back on the heels. I thought after Game 1, the Islanders looked exactly what they were, an 8th seed, a young team, little playoff experience, getting blown out by a perennial cup team. But after Game 2, they could have gotten absolutely just destroyed. Like you said, after those first four periods of this series where they got absolutely smoked in the first period in Game 2, they were down, you know, 3-1 almost immediately, and then they come back and find a way to pull out that game. I think that just gave them a ton of confidence, and even though Game 3 hurt, but they're going through, it feels like they're getting almost a postseason's worth of experience in just these first four games because of the swings in play, because of the lead changes, because of how quickly games have turned all around and upside down. That's given them a ton of experience, I think, in a short amount of time. It feels like more than just four games of experience for some of the guys who haven't been there. I think they could easily win this series in six. I mean, it'll probably go the full seven just because the Penguins on skill alone will definitely sneak out another game. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Islanders win this in six or seven. They're a 5-on-5 play. It's just dominating the Penguins. And I don't think the Penguins have ever been this challenged by a group of 9 or 12 forwards, depending how deep the Islanders go. It's impressive to watch them on 5-on-5. The Penguins basically won Game 3 because of the power play, because the Islanders took a few dumb penalties and Crosby dove near the final play of the game.
That's what he does.
3-1 in the series.
Now, I agree with you. I think this has been a very nice surprise for the casual hockey fan who's, you know, I think everybody looks at the numbers that are in front of the teams when you put them in a bracket. You see the 1 seed, you see the 8 seed, and I think most, looking on ESPN and NHL, all the favorites picked the Penguins. The bigger question is, should the Islanders pull off this ginormous upset? Is this one of the biggest upsets in NHL Stanley Cup playoff history? You'd have to think that it would be.
In the recent history of both teams, yes, but I think in terms of true talent, while the top guns might be better for Pittsburgh, I think when you look through the forwards and you kind of, grade out each spot 1 through 12, I think the Islanders go just as deep as the Penguins in terms of just overall guys that they have. I think the Islanders' bottom six guys do a little bit, can bring some different things to the table than the Penguins' bottom guys can. A guy like a Michael Grabner, you've got a guy like Brad Boyes, who plays on the top line, but, in his past, he's been a second or third line guy. They've got a ton of depth. Casey Cizikas has 2 goals this series. I mean, they're getting production from all their guys, but I think that's what's the most scary thing. Not so much that their defense, and that'll be an interesting, too, with Andy McDonald probably done for the playoffs, one
right.
of the big defensive
yeah.
downers. I think that's the biggest challenge for the Penguins defensemen have just gotten run over. I mean, the Islanders, not only they play a fast game, they can play a physical game. They can play any style he wants to. So whatever game the Penguins bring, the Islanders have been up to the challenge. I think that's what's most exciting about this series, that I think given their team's history, the Penguins being constantly around the Cup the last few years and in the playoffs the last few years, compared to the Islanders, who haven't been in the playoffs since 2007, it would be an upset. But just to the pure hockey fan, who sees what's going on the ice and the talent, I don't think it would be that much of an upset.
35 goals have been scored in this series, and actually the Islanders have a one-goal edge in outscoring Pittsburgh 18-17 in this series, and it's very reminiscent of last year's goal-scoring barrage against the Flyers in the quarterfinal round last year. Where the heck is the defense? And the answer is, well, it's not in Pittsburgh, and the Pens have just made a move. Marc-Andre Fleury is going to sit, and Thomas Vokoun is going to start Game 5 tomorrow night back in Pittsburgh. And if you're a Pens fan, you're nervous right now? John?
I think you're definitely nervous. I mean, the goaltender, you see the way Fleury played, the goaltender change, it's got to make you nervous. I don't know that you're desperately, you're jumping off a bridge thinking that you're going to lose, but you have to be nervous. Given what happened against the Flyers last year when you just got run over, and now here you come after the best record again, and then now here comes the eighth seed, and you're getting pushed around again.
It's going to be a very compelling matchup for this Game 5, and I think both teams really, really want it. But Marc-Andre Fleury's numbers, sporting a 3.40 goals against average and an .891 save percentage. Anytime you dip down underneath that .925, .915 mark on save percentage, let alone the goals against average over 3, that's not gonna cut it in the playoffs, because there's 2 things that win in the playoffs, and that's defense and special teams. And I guess you could throw goaltending into the mix too. The focus shifts more towards, and the pressure shifts more towards the goaltending and the special teams. So it will be a very big, big, big game number 5 coming up. The next series in the Eastern Conference quarterfinal matchups, the Washington Capitals and the New York Rangers. The Capitals on fire right now, and this was my dark horse coming out of the East, the team that nobody's really talking about. The Caps started off very, very slow in the beginning of the regular season and really turned it around in the second half of the season. They are the 3 seed. They won the Southeast, even though you have a team that's in Winnipeg, which is significantly far away from Washington, D.C. That's another story for next time. Goaltending is the focus, which is the exact opposite of the Pittsburgh Islanders series. And goaltending is the focus in this one and not the offense, Jeff.
It's an interesting series so far. I mean, in the last few years, it's been the home team who's taken the series. A few years ago, it was the Capitals dropped the first 2 home games and then had to rally back from 3-1 to win. Last year, the Caps had a 3-2 edge, and the Rangers rallied back to take the last 2 games. So it's always been fun series, and these 2 teams have gotten together. And you're right, in the first 2 games, I mean, the goaltending was excellent. Both Lundqvist and Holtby looked great, and then all of a sudden the scene shifted, and the goal scoring started to shift, with Holtby and Lundqvist each giving up three or more, and that's, you know, that's going to be what's interesting now is pretty much the goaltenders, I think, have pretty much been even. And even in the one game that the Capitals won 3-1, I mean, that was a 1-0 game for the Rangers, and it was tied for a while. It's been interesting to watch for the most part because the Rangers, I didn't think were that strong of a team coming into the final stretch of the year, but then they went on that, they got on that hot run. Capitals had been hot seemingly for months, so it was really like two teams meeting up that were, you know, playing as good a hockey as you can. And I think that's what we've seen so far is that most of these games have been pretty good. You've got an overtime game. Derek Stepan scored a goal late in the third period to win it. So you're seeing exactly what we thought this series would be. We figured, we decided that this would go six, seven games, and now you're seeing the, you know, who's going to drop that first home game? Is it going to be the Rangers tonight, or is it going to be the Capitals?
Jeff, you picked the Rangers in six in this. Are you still holding on to that?
I've got it, right? I don't have a choice.
You don't get a mulligan on this one, man.
There's no redo, so I guess I'll have to stick. I mean, certainly I'll be I won't be upset if the Rangers bow out a little bit to that, but I think they still have the tools. I think they just needed to get that first win in the books, and I think they'll start to play a little bit better. And they did. I thought they played very well in the third period. I thought the Capitals were the better team for the first two periods the other night, but in the third period, the Rangers, not only on the scoreboard, but they played a lot better. It'll be interesting to see if that translates over to tonight.
Yeah, I agree that this is – you look at both goaltenders, you look at the way these two teams are physical. You expect a tight series. It reminds you a lot of last year. I wonder trading away
Nash.
Not Nash. Trading away Gabrick.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. I meant Gabrick. Sorry. That's my fault.
What kind of is that going to have a detrimental effect in the playoffs for the Rangers? Do they still need that kind of player to win a game in the playoffs, or are they still the same team, or just as good a team without him?
Again, I think this is one of these series where tonight, even though it's only Game 4, is a pivotal game. Usually Game 4 and Game 5 in a series is so huge. I think this series is going to go 6 or 7. I think John, you had him in Washington in 6. I had Washington in, you had Washington in 7. I have Washington in 6. You have to wonder if Gabrick was that guy that just didn't fit the mold of the rest of the locker room. Something else had to be going on with Tortorella, and maybe there's a conflict. We don't know. You're playing in a very tough market to play in terms of, you know, accountability. Everybody expects in New York that each one of their teams, whether it's hockey, baseball, basketball, football, whatever, that you have to win a championship or at least contend for a championship. The Rangers have had all the stars aligned. They signed the big offseason deals. They have the all-star lineup. If they get bounced in the first round, I'm going to bring this up again like I did last week, is Tortorella done?
I think,
you know what, Rob? You bring up an excellent point, and nobody's going to talk about this because it's always the opposite way around.
It's taboo to talk about it right now.
Yeah, we're all talking about it right now. I mean, normally you get the big star, the coach disagreement. In any other sport, the coach is getting the axe. In this case, I mean, if you had seen this from any other market, this was a case of it was in the NBA or the MLB, whatever, you would have seen Tortorella gone and Gabrick had stayed because he's the big star. He's making the big bucks. He scored 40 goals a few years ago. You know, John Tortorella's won a cup, but, you know, what has he done lately? I mean, he got to the conference finals last year. Other than that, it's been round one disappointment or missed playoff disappointment. Here's a case where they got rid of the star player because he didn't fit in with the coach's system, and then the coach and the GM turned out to be a genius. That rarely happens in sports because normally it's the coach who gets the axe, and the player is the one who normally stays. In this case, it worked out for better, and you have to give a lot of credit to Glenn Sather. But that said, they made the right move. They've been playing hotter. I think Tortorella is probably safer. They had found a way to not make the playoffs after you consider Hockey News, Sports Illustrated, whoever you want to pick, had them saying, well, they almost won the conference last year, and all they did this year, they added one of the best scores in the game in Rick Nash. How can they not at least win the conference? Maybe not the Cup Finals, but how can they at least not win the conference this year? Well, they got in, they were a 6 seed. They were on the verge of being an 8 seed. If they lose in the first round, I think it's certainly a possibility, but I think getting into the playoffs did enough to save him his job and that his system still does work. I'm not sure there's anybody out there who's going to do a better job than he has done. especially with some of the lesser players. I mean, how much has he gotten out of
guys? I think he's a heck of a coach. He's a heck of a coach.
Yeah, he's elevated Girardi. He's elevated, a guy like Stroman. He's elevated a lot of guys, but the results just win and loss wise haven't been there.
I agree. So that is the wrap up on that series. Game number four is tonight, Wednesday night, at the Garden, and should be a very, very big contest. We'll see if the goaltenders show up. The final series that we're going to talk about in this segment is the Boston-Toronto series, the original six matchup between the number four-seeded Boston Bruins, who could have very easily been a two-seed, but had they won that final game of the regular season, going up against the Toronto Maple Leafs, who haven't been into the playoffs since the high-definition television era, and it's kind of nice to watch them in high def this time around. And this series has gone, being a Toronto guy, as expected. I think Boston is just too strong for Toronto. Toronto stole a game, and Jamie Reimer's a pretty good goaltender. But if James Van Riemsdyk is the guy on your team with the most Stanley Cup playoff experience, that's a problem. And that problem is showing on the ice as well.
Yeah, I think I said to you earlier in our previous podcast, I think Boston is the best team in the East.
I really agree with you.
I really like the way they're playing. I think that one game was nice for Toronto to kind of jump in and steal, but I think you're seeing in the other two games what Boston is and what Toronto is. And, you know, Toronto, I think, might steal another game in the series, but I think Boston will close this out pretty quickly.
Jeff?
Hey, it's easy to forget this Boston team. There's essentially the same makeup of a team that went to the Cup Finals 2 years ago in dominating fashion in the Eastern Conference and then rallied from a 3-2 deficit to win the Stanley Cup. This is essentially the same makeup. There may be one or two guys who aren't there from that team, but this is still a very deep team. I thought all year, Penguins, whatever, the 15-game win streak, whatever, top seed in the conference, that's fine. But I think in pure terms of matching up, and while the Penguins, I think, won the majority of the games over the Bruins, I still think the Bruins are the top team. I think they're the most talented 1-12. Their forecheck is suffocating. Everyone on their roster is capable of having that 15-goal season, if not more. They're dangerous. I mean, they've gotten goals from Adam McQuaid. They've gotten goals from Johnny Boychuk. We know what Char can do, but Seidenberg can be a dangerous guy every once in a while on the point. They literally have 18 potential goal scorers every night. They're on every team, maybe there's a few guys who are stay-at-home defensemen or a pure mucker who's not going to score. They literally have 18 scoring options every night, and that's what makes them
Jeff,
so dangerous.
I couldn't agree with you more there, and watching these games in most minutes, when I tried to watch the whole thing, but when Boston scored that shorthanded goal to put Toronto down 4-1, I was like, all right, I've had enough of this.
Turned it off?
Oh yeah, totally.
Come on.
Totally. I was just frustrated. What do you want me to do?
David, might be another 9 years. We don't know.
I know. And my son will be graduating high school. It's going to be awesome. David Krejci, 2 goals, 5 assists, and he's a +5. Milan Lucic, 6 assists for a +5. Nathan Horton, also a +5, but he's going to add 3 goals and an assist. Insane numbers out of these guys. And Tuukka Rask, 2-1, 236 goals against average, .929 save percentage. Not spectacular numbers, but and John, like you said, I can't see Toronto coming out of this series. As much as it pains me to say this, I'm a realist first, and then a diehard fan second. I'm going to say if they squeak out one more, again, I'd be surprised. But I just think that the way that Boston is playing is really unbelievable right now, and I can't see it. So that's going to wrap it up for our Eastern Conference quarterfinal matchup. Jeff, once again, thank you for joining us. We'll hopefully you can join us again on the Blue Line.
Thank you for having me anytime, guys, and hopefully my predictions don't end up looking tremendously awful in a week or so.
Well, while we got you here, here's what we're going to do with this, and we was going to say this is the third period, but since you're here, we're going to do like a point system here and how this is going to work, and if you know, any listeners out there want to tweet out their predictions for the next round, you can tweet at us at Knights Radio. We're going to give award 1 point if you select the team that wins the matchup, and then an additional point if you guess the correct number of games. So right now, John Flacco has a 1-0 edge on all of us. So we're going to tabulate all the points round by round, see how it goes, but we'll see who the big winner is after this first round. So that's going to do it for
us. As long as I don't lose by like 10 points.
In which case, we'll have you on every week. But Jeff, thanks again for joining us, man. Thanks for taking time out of your day to join us here on the Blue Line.
I appreciate it, buddy. Anytime.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. And there goes Jeff. That's Jeff O'Connor of WGLS fame. That's going to take us off to our next break. And third period, we're going to wrap everything up, the rest of the Western Conference quarterfinal matchups right here on WSHS, the Blue Line. Back after this.
Do you play an instrument but don't get enough practice time? Do you want to learn how to play an instrument? Then join the Sterling High School Concert Band. They are in dire need of low brass and saxophone players. However, everybody is welcome to join. It is a great character building experience and an even better way to experience music in a new life. They perform several times a year, including a winter concert in December, a spring concert in May, and they take various trips throughout the year performing for the community. Rehearsals take place during Zero Block and Access every day. For more information, please see Mr. Steve Goldeck in the band room or contact your guidance counselor. This message has been brought to you by Sterling High School Concert Band and WSHS Sterling High School Radio.
Sterling Sport.
Good rebound from Terry Crisman. Looks like he's fouled there. Puts up a desperation shot, and
he goes in!
It's good!
It's good!
Always updated.
First and goal from the four. Preston Harrison going to run out. He's 4 yards away from pay dirt. Passes it complete. The touchdown! Marcus Taylor!
Always running.
They got to shoot it. Kylie, shot.
Tie game. We're going to overtime.
Always live.
Here we go. Sterling trying to slam it home.
Follow us on Twitter at Knights Radio, where live game updates and scores will be tweeted throughout the live broadcasted games. So follow us on Twitter at Knights Radio to get all of Sterling's live athletic updates. Stay up to date with the latest scores and updates with at Knights Radio.
Hi, this is Clint Wiley, physical education teacher, head football coach at Sterling High School. You are listening to WSHS Sterling High School Radio.
And welcome back to the Blue Line right here on WSHS, Sterling High School Radio. Rob Strauss, John Flacco. Again, another big shout-out to Jeff O'Connor for joining us in that second segment. A lot of good details out of Jeff. He knows his stuff.
Absolutely.
That's a good Rowan University education
there
and
that
WGLS training. That's how we roll here. And we have a couple more matchups that we still have yet to talk about, and the prediction game we already talked about. And we have one more question from a fan of our show, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. But the other two series we're talking about real quick, the Anaheim Ducks and the Detroit Red Wings, knotted at 2 games apiece going into Game 5. And I think even the experts were predicting that Detroit was going to be one of those teams that kind of flew in under the radar, didn't do too well for the first 90% of the season. It took those last 4 or 5 games for them to get into the playoffs, start playing well. And now it's down to a best of three.
Yeah, we talked, and I said to you before the end of the season, oh, Detroit's going to sneak in. And at the time, it wasn't official. But, at the time, they were playing well, and I thought they would make it to the playoffs, and they did. And I think a lot of people expected Anaheim, with the amount of scoring they did this year, the way they were playing with their top line, that they would be able to kind of take this older Detroit team and, put them out of their misery pretty early. But Detroit has, they showed last game, they're not ready to go away. They're hanging in there.
And no joke, they are a good team. They're a veteran team. They've done this umpteen thousand years in a row. I think the last time they missed a playoffs was the early 90s, I believe.
It was
even before that. I know they had some ridiculous
stat. No, it was
stat
definitely in the 90s.
Where Detroit had made the playoffs like 27 straight years.
I know there was one player on the Red Wings. They said the last time they missed, he was three. So obviously he was a younger player. But
yeah, and that's just an amazing statistic. There was a stat a long time ago, back in the early 2000s, where the St. Louis Blues had the longest consecutive playoff run. And since the Blues kind of fell off the map in the mid-2000s for a little while, now obviously they're back, and we'll talk about them next. But Detroit doing such a great job year after year after year getting into the playoffs. This is a great series that they're having right now with Anaheim, and unfortunately nobody's really paying attention to it because it's, I think, in my opinion, being overshadowed by all the other series that are the more compelling matchups. You have a WWE matchup breaking out in Ottawa and Montreal. You've got the Sidney Crosby and all the stars in Pittsburgh taking on the Islanders. Washington and the Rangers, you've got Ovechkin over there. And then you've got your West Coast flavor. You've got Vancouver, San Jose. But I just think this is one of those series that's kind of like, eh. Yeah. It's like a B-plus matchup.
Well, you know what it is? It's typical West Coast hockey, though. This Western Conference hockey. These teams are, you know, they bring these games into the playoffs. And unlike in the East where teams just, you know, pound each other for six, seven games, these guys are trying to do what they do in the regular season. I think Anaheim, because Detroit's a little more physical team, Anaheim is not dealing with that and has to adjust, whereas Detroit is opening up room. Guys like Pavel Datsyuk and Johan Franzen are skating around like Crosby and Malkin at the end of games, and they're finding a way to help their team stay in games and win games. And I think it's just a different dynamic in the playoffs.
And on the flip side of things, you have Anaheim who's mainstay is Jonas Hiller in between the pipes and has played very, very well. And that's a great series to watch. Unfortunately, again, like I said, I think it's overshadowed by all the other more attractive matchups, if you will. And to give you an update, I believe we all had Detroit across the board. John, you need your pick of Detroit in five is obviously out.
Yes.
Unless Anaheim wants to forfeit some games. That's up to them, though. And so right across the board between
I was high on Detroit.
And everybody is. Yeah. And everybody is. The other matchup is the St. Louis Blues against the reigning Stanley Cup champion L.A. Kings. And at first, St. Louis jumps out to a 2-0 lead. And now the Kings have bounced back and protected their home ice. Now the series is going to shift back to St. Louis. And I think it's whoever can win one on the other team's ice is going to win. They're going to have to. That's the way it's got to go from here on out. St. Louis posed to strike the upset here, even though it's only a 4-5 matchup.
Yeah, I think I said from the beginning, I thought this was a toss-up for me with these two teams.
Coin flip.
Yeah, I mean, the Kings, defensively, the Kings aren't what they were last year, especially with Quick. You know, I mean, it's hard to repeat what he was last year. I mean, he hasn't had a bad year, but, like, you know, he wasn't the fantastic player he was in the playoffs last year. Goaltending has dropped off in St. Louis as well. You look at the last game where there's a lot of goals scored, that tends to favor, I think, the Kings. But you look at all the other games, the most goals, now to score a goal is two goals. So, you know, those things can go either way. So this is still a toss-up. And like you said, it might come down to goaltending. It might come down to the special teams on how these things – it might come down to a bounce or luck,
yep.
You know, with this kind of series.
Jeff's got a shot at getting a point back because both John and myself have St. Louis in seven. Jeff has L.A. in six. So some points to be had here if you're – I don't know what we're going to call this little prediction game. We'll come up with some stupid cup or call it something. I don't know. We'll come up with that for next week. We have 1 week to think about it.
Yeah. Send your suggestions in.
Yes, please do. One other question from Mr. Henry Kelsey, English teacher extraordinaire here from Sterling High School. And this could be a nice segue into the John Flacco segment of the ex-Flyer Report. What are the Flyers going to do about next year's defense pairings? Are they going to have any big free agent signings?
Well, considering that the salary cap is going down, it's not likely, I think. Unless you're going to amnesty somebody.
Got to amnesty either Briere or Brizgalov, one or the other.
Yeah, and I don't think there's enough room even with the amnesty to bring in. I mean, who's out there? You know, unless the market really drops off, considering that the salary cap is going down for what owners are going to pay, what salaries are going to be. I don't see them in the market. You know, they didn't really spend this year because they missed out on Suter, but, you know, who's out there to get? I mean, I think they really have to be creative here and try to beef up the defense because it's not just one player. They need to rehaul that entire defensive core. I mean, they went out and re-signed Kimmo Timonen for another year, and he's not even the best defenseman on that entire team. They've been plagued by injuries. Injuries. And they've just... It's killed them, but not, I mean, to the sense that they've lost games because of it, but it hurts when you have to rotate rookies in.
Sure.
You know, week after week.
Obviously, the big key into that whole mix is Pronger and getting hurt, and that's a big, big part of it. But he's been gone for so long that you can't even really put him into the equation anymore because if the Flyers – if they hang on to him, they don't have to take his salary as a cap hit. So they have some issues in and of itself. So that will be, again, when we get closer towards the end of the season, we start getting a list of who the free agents are coming up for next season. We can focus on that a little bit more, but obviously the Flyers have a lot of holes. There's actually an article in the Courier Post today about what the Flyers need to do offensively in the offseason to fix what the problem is. So to answer your question there, Mr. Henry John Kelsey, we're going to have to wait to see what transpires and what really happens with that. So moving over to the ex-Flyer report, there's about a dozen ex-Flyers right now, and we like to do this every week here on the Blue Line of the ex-Flyers who are in the playoffs making an impact. John, what do you got for us?
All right, well, I'm going to read through the entire list, and then I'm going to go back and talk about impact because that list is short. On Toronto, we have Joffrey Lupul and JVR.
Hey-o.
Michael Hanzus on Chicago. In L.A., we still have Richards, Justin Williams, and Jeff Carter. Jaromir Jagr is with the Bruins. Dan Carcillo is with Chicago as well. Terry Karkner playing for the Islanders.
Wow, nice.
Aaron Asham on the Rangers. Tom Sestito for the – well, he's no longer playing for the Canucks. And then backup goalies Marty Biron for the Rangers and Emery for Chicago, who I believe is still injured. Right now. But really, the only players, Carcillo and obviously Cicito's done. Carcillo and Asham haven't played in many games or made a difference. Karkner, I believe, got hurt.
Yep.
And his time has been limited. You have Lupul and JVR, you know, at the top of the list right now with points, although both of their plus minus are not good. The most influential, Jaromir Jagr is making very little impact with Boston. I believe he's even and has, I think, 1 point
right
at this time. Jeff Carter is a non-factor in minus in LA. Richards has an assist. Williams has a goal. Both of them are, you know, getting about 20 minutes a game. Offensively, Lupul and JVR have 3 points east. They're making an impact with that team because you're not getting much scoring else from Toronto. But I think the most influential player in the playoffs that is an ex-Flyer is not a guy who is scoring a lot, but definitely is playing a role as Michael Hanzus.
Zeus. We talked about this before we went on air.
He left L.A. last year, was on another team earlier in this year, and got traded to Chicago late. So he's playing on obviously he's not playing on the top line there.
Right.
But he is logging a lot of ice time as a third-line player. He's contributing offensively. And you look at his plus-minus, he's one of the top plus-minus in the playoffs.
So of the ex-Flyer report, he's your first star of the week?
He's the top star, or he's the first star as far as impact ex-Flyers. Then I would go JVR and then Joffrey Lupul.
Shameless plug here for JVR. And the goal that he scored against Boston to pretty much seal the deal in game number two out in Boston, where he was falling down backwards and put it in past Tuukka Rask, was just ridiculous. If you get a chance to check it out on YouTube, please do that. It was ridiculous. And while you're on the internet, feel free to tweet us some of your predictions, some of the questions you have for the quote-unquote experts here at the Blue Line between John, myself, and maybe even Jeff O'Connor, who may be joining us next week. He might be a third man in every week, which would be kind of nice. Nice little addition here on the Blue Line. You can tweet us at Knights Radio. Any of your questions, anything you want to hear, and we'll give you guys a shout out, and I'll obviously talk about your your complaint, your and some of your NHL questions and comments.
Yeah. We'll read your complaints. We may not listen to them. Are we going to have our second round matchups by Monday of next week? I forgot to look at the calendar.
We should be okay. If not, we'll write them down beforehand and we'll reveal them on air. How about that? We'll put them in a sealed envelope, get them notarized, and do all that stuff. But that's going to do it for this edition of the Blue Line right here on WSHS Sterling High School Radio. I'd like to thank Jeff O'Connor and Henry Kelsey for being a part of our podcast this time around. Next podcast
and
is...
Dylan, thanks for tweeting to us.
And Dylan as well, thank you very much. And next air date, tentatively, set for Monday, May 13th, depending on what we have going on here on Sterling Radio. And that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Blue Line. John, thank you again for joining me.
Yep.
And we'll see you next week right here on the Blue Line on WSHS Sterling High School Radio.